it almost seems like there's even more of an opportunity, especially for what we would consider to be our creative, our, you know, our visionary, our imaginative young person to feel like, okay, I actually am on the right track because nobody knows what's going on.
Welcome to Learning Unboxed, a conversation about teaching, learning, and the future of work. I'm your host and chief goddess of the PASS Foundation, Annalise Corbin. We know the current model for education is obsolete. It was designed to create fleets of assembly line workers, not the thinkers and problem solvers needed today. We've seen the innovations that are possible within education, and it's our goal to leave the box behind and reimagine what education can look like in your own backyard. Welcome to today's episode of Learning Unboxed. As always, I'm excited to talk with another great innovator in the transformative education space. Joining us today is Kalima Fergus Ayale, head of the New York City campus for the Winchendon School. Welcome to Learning Unboxed.
Thank you. It's such a pleasure to be here. So thank you for inviting me. I appreciate the invitation.
Oh, absolutely, Kalima. I am so excited to have this conversation. And so let's set some context for our listeners as we get started. First and foremost, about the New York City campus for the Winchendon School is an oasis in the heart of Manhattan, where students are guided through their real-world learning to connect with their passion through a unique citywide field study program. They are guided by real-world learning. Classes are energetic. Teachers design active environments where students lead discussions, debate questions, and draw their own conclusions. Thank goodness for that. It is designed to immerse students in challenging and meaningful learning experiences, both inside and outside the classroom. Their unique program, which includes their iLab and their CoLab programming, engages students through interdisciplinary studies, building better inquiry skills, and focusing on character development. Their students develop confidence in who they are, pride in the city they call home, and a clear sense of how they can contribute to their community. And they graduate and go on to many of the finest colleges and universities around. Wow, that is a lot. And it sounds just incredible. I will admit I have not had the chance to come and see it, but it's going to make my bucket list, I can guarantee, just from everything I've seen about it. So let's start with sort of the high level. This sounds like a really amazing place. And it's a high school program. Yes, limited to high school or more than just high school kiddos there.
It is limited to high school. So just to give some additional context, is the original campus is in Western Massachusetts. It still exists. The Winchendon School was started almost 100 years ago, right? So when you think about 100 years ago, where we didn't know what we know now, but there was an educator who said, well, our traditional way of educating students isn't working for all students, and we can do something better, and whatever we do will benefit all students, right? So at the foundation of this is this early idea about what differentiation could look like, what innovation in education can look like. And at the time, he was able to identify what we now know to be boys with ADHD, right? But this is before any real conversations around neurodiversity. So one of the things that I like to highlight is that our institution as a whole, the Winchendon School, has always been involved in this idea of innovating, right? So it's baked into the ethos. And what's lovely is that they, you know, the Winchendon School, which is a boarding school campus in Massachusetts at the moment and does, you know, all of the things, the athletic programming and all of that. But about a decade ago, a couple of faculty members, and I'll name them, so Sean Duncan, Jared McGee, started working on this idea of creating this experiential learning program. And it ended up turning into a school within a school, right? So this idea of like, okay, well, let's see what we can do if we really get young people involved in service or travel and having these experiences, which we know how enriching that is. But what if we make that the fundamental principle of our way of approaching education. And they, and then that turned into a program that was school-wide. But then this idea of, why don't we create a satellite campus where that would be so weaved into the student experience? And then 7 years ago, that became what we have now, which is the Winchendon School, New York City. So the idea is that, you know, again, in the heart of Manhattan, right? So right across from the Empire State Building, the students see that the city is their campus, right? So they have an opportunity to learn from the entire city. And that happens, as you mentioned in the introduction, through our program. So the iLab program, as we call it, it starts off in the beginning of the year. And these are students grades 9 through 12, as you just stated, high school. Starts off at the beginning of the year, and it is curriculum-based. So the classroom teacher is planning these weekly activities, and it rotates, so it's every class gets to do this twice. And these experiences are tied to what they're doing in the classroom, right? So when you start off the week, you would be building towards, you know, our field study happens on Thursday afternoons. And so Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, you're building towards that Thursday experience. And then we're back together on campus on Fridays. And we're really able to see how much that experience really feeds into their learning, but also the way it really just allows students to connect more with themselves as they learn about who they are, what they enjoy, what they like to engage in. And then what happens is over time, by the time they reach their junior or senior year, many of them really start to explore, well, there's something that I want to do that, you know, I can look for an internship, or I can build this relationship with this organization and work with them at more length. And so we really, the idea is really to plant those seeds of, like, you know, everyone is unique. And when you get out into the world, you really get to see who you are based on how you interact with these experiences and how you engage with each other.
Absolutely. And such a powerful opportunity for kids. We see the same thing in our programming at PASS Foundation. Is the more opportunities that we give kids to get out into the world, to meet other people, to interact with other students, and to feel like they're making a contribution by solving real problems that our community is facing, it's empowering. And empowering translates to confidence, right?
Yes. Yes. Right. Because we always say, these are our future leaders, right? We always say those with our, we say those with our mouth, but we kind of need to actually give them the opportunities to be in the world, to see, you know, and like you said, how do you solve real world problems? Like, it shouldn't exist in a vacuum, or it shouldn't just be something that they're learning about through their phone and through technology, but actually getting out there right now. Because we do switch. So after they've gone through that first segment of the year, it does switch to where the students can choose a specific theme that they want to spend more time engaging with, right? So they'll have some consecutive weeks. And one of those, we call it iLab threads. So one of those threads is service. And so this year, students are partnering with a food pantry where they can go and put together food packages for families or serve hot meals. And really this idea of, like, yeah, there is something that each person can do, but the idea is also to gain a better understanding of what are the real issues and the real challenges. And then that leads them to be like, oh, well, think, what are the issues that I'm concerned about, right? So somebody else may have structured this experience for me, but what are the things that are really near and dear to my own heart that I might want to investigate and learn more about? And what are the ways in which I can, you know, again, and I'm a big proponent of this, even engaging with technology, right? Can we partner with the AI tools to design better systems? That's one of the things. I mean, I kind of have my nerd crush, which is a professor at Princeton, Ruha Benjamin, who has written a number of books about what it can look like if we tap into our own, well, she calls it the other AI, right? Our ancestral intelligence, and how we can actually partner with AI, right, artificial intelligence, in order to make a better world for all of us. So I just love the idea of that.
I do too. I imagine the kids really embrace that idea as well, right? You know, one of the things I really love about the way you describe the program, I really love the fact that you are leveraging the city itself. I mean, for folks who've not been there, right? You know, this is a city that is incredibly diverse in the sense that, I mean, literally, what are you looking for? You can find it there. A variety of people, a variety of places, a variety of languages, a variety of perspectives and experiences. And the list goes on and on and on and on and on, right? And what I love is you're sending the kids out into that and saying, go find yourself. And oh, by the way, as you're finding yourself, you will find your community and you will find your place in the community and your contributions into the bigger, broader, the city, the world. And I suspect some of that comes from the fact that from you as a leader, that you've had so many global experiences. You've taught, I think I saw, in 5 different countries, right? I would imagine that collectively lends to this really amazing sets of conversations that are being had at a school.
Yes, definitely. And thank you for your description. I'm like, maybe we should just put all of that on the website. I love it. Because you're absolutely right. You know, we tend to take, and you know, it's unfortunate, right? But we tend to take where we are for granted. We tend to take a lot of our own, you know, just the aspects of our life, just, you know, becomes the background. I always say too sometimes, especially because I work in Manhattan and it's busy and you're like trying to get past all the tourists. And then there are times when I'm like, wait, everybody comes here to enjoy this. Maybe I should look up too, you know, this kind of thing. Or like, you know, a friend comes to town and you do a little bit more going out or Broadway show, you know, the live shows and performances. You're like, yeah, I should do this more often because this is really the beautiful aspect of living here. And then you're right, there are all these hidden gems because it really is so diverse. And I do think that growing up as a New Yorker, I just wasn't familiar. Like, I didn't know that we had all these ecosystems. I didn't know that as a result of the EPA, you know, 50, 60, 70 years ago, we now have whales and dolphins off the coast of Brooklyn. Like, I didn't know any of those things because we can be, and I do say this about, you know, I'm from Brooklyn, we can be a little provincial in little neighborhoods and the way things are set up. And so, really having, you know, again, we think of it as forced fun because they are at those later stages of adolescence where they grumble. But, you know, you can really see on their faces that they're lighting up, they're engaging, right? And I don't want to take anything away from, you know, our engagement with technology. I think it's an amazing tool. But I do think that sometimes we have a difficult time sort of peeling away unless we have a novice experience that can hold and capture us for those moments. And so I think it's a wonderful thing for young people to realize, yeah, this was here and I didn't even know, right? And there are, you know, of course, there are, you know, some of our students who just have their own interests that they've explored, be it museums and the like. But having some of those experiences be ones that they wouldn't necessarily have chosen for themselves, and then having them have walk away with such an enjoyable experience is always a gift, you know? Like, most of them probably wouldn't have gone to a DNA learning center and done a fingerprint analysis. Probably not, right? But just having those experiences curated for them is always a beautiful thing.
Are you ready to join the movement to revolutionize education? Stay tuned for the full unveiling of my forthcoming book, Hacking School, 5 Strategies to Link Learning to Life, where we'll dive deeper into these topics and unlock key strategies to educational transformation. If you want to stay in the know, sign up for notifications at pastfoundation.org/hackingschool.
It is a beautiful thing. And I would also add that part of the beauty of this thing, right, is the fact that by design, right, by design, whether it started out as a program, a small school inside of a bigger school, or it natively comes as just an innovative school startup. I think part of what you're talking about is embracing the fact that we can, and maybe we should, I would argue yes, but you know, I'm benefit of the doubt here, that we should do something very different, right? And that's the school that we used to need is not the school that we need today. And certainly for our learners, that we have the capacity as humans to be infinitely creative. So let's talk a little bit about this concept of innovative schools and sort of the design processes or thinking that goes about to even get us to be that innovative school, so that we can get to the point where we can create and design for belonging in our world today.
Yes, definitely. And just to give a little bit of the journey that I had been on, you know, one of the things that I remark about is that, you know, people always want to know too, like, really, why hasn't education changed very much? It's almost like we just pass it on. You know, I'm teaching biology right now. We're doing genetics. We just kind of keep passing on these genes. And that's exactly right, right? Most of us, we go into this profession, and a lot of times it ends up being, you know, I don't want to generalize, but it comes out of our own lived experience and exactly. Education. Mm-hmm. For the most part, we've all experienced some form, you know, very similar form of education, whatever those experiences were, may have led for us to want to remain in that as a profession. And we kind of just keep the cycle going. And I do think that a huge part of me at least starting to think outside the box is connected, as you mentioned early in the conversation, to me having the experience of working in other countries. So that started with my experience as a Peace Corps volunteer. So my experience right out of undergrad was actually to go and I taught in East Africa. I worked at a boarding school in Tanzania. And because that was my first teaching job, right? My first teaching job was as a chemistry teacher in a different country, right? And so the experience that I had was already different from the experience that I would have coming back to New York and teaching in a public school. So I was already starting with this idea of things can be different, right? It doesn't have to all look the same. And I think I've always carried that with me, but then the actual tools, that happened much later. So I had already been about 20 years into my career, and I was actually teaching in Cairo, Egypt at the time, but had decided, you know, and what's interesting about being overseas too is it's really gives you an opportunity to engage with Americans who are in different industries, maybe in a way that, you know, I think most people sort of fall into a routine. You have your friends that you've stayed connected with at different points in time, but, you know, making those new connections as an adult can be a little challenging, but I think being overseas kind of forces you to because you are so far away from home. So you can form these kind of like really deep and meaningful adult relationships fairly quickly. And I made friends with a woman who was a professor at the American University of Cairo, and she told me about this two-day design thinking workshop that was being offered. And I was like, that sounds interesting. And I recognize that design thinking has been really common in the business space for a long time, but I'd never used it as an educator. And so having this immersive experience, and it was related to service. So it was one of those where the theme was around like, okay, well, how do we use design thinking to basically solve problems, to solve real world issues? And I just remember sitting with that and saying, yeah, this is something that we should be thinking about in all industries. How do we shift what we're doing? And I do recognize that, as you mentioned, it can be done in a number of contexts, right? It doesn't necessarily have to mean designing an entire school. It could also have to do with just designing something so that there's a cultural shift, right, within a school. And so I thought about that. I ended up doing another online course that was through UVA. And then when I came back to the U.S. after being overseas and started at an independent school here in New York City, I ended up going to the NAIS, which is the National Association of Independent Schools, has an annual conference for teachers and faculty of color. And so I ended up doing another design. And so for me, this piece about, okay, so what does that look like in schools to use this design thinking? And what was nice is they were able to take this idea of liberatory design. It wasn't specifically tailored to education, but the presenters did. They did. They said, what could this look like in a school? And what they were able to do is bring in this idea of mindset shifts, because what people realize is that I know sometimes people have said this quote, and I don't know who it's attributed to, but it's like culture eats strategy for breakfast, right? This mm-hmm. idea of like, yeah, mm-hmm. you come up with all these plans, but at the end of the day, you still have this that you're coming up against. And what I thought was remarkable was this idea of thinking about the mindset as then being the focal point. So maybe I'm not going to focus on this change. Maybe I'm actually going to figure out what mindset. So is there a self-awareness or building relational trust? Is it an issue of dealing with ideas around power? And so that shifted everything for me, because it kind of broadened the scope to thinking about, you know, because I think sometimes in education, we can be very knowledge centric, right? What do I need to know? Oh, as long as I read this book, you know, go to this training. But what stands in the way is this idea of like, okay, so what are the actual mindset shifts that I need in order to have the capacity to even show up in a different way? And I think for me, that was kind of the missing piece, if you will, because I was like, oh, if I can build activities and experiences around shifting mindset, then we can actually get somewhere, right, with some of these other parts of the puzzle. So again, it's all an experiment, right? You try different things. Some of them really work, some of them don't. But it's been a wonderful journey, because then it, for some reason, I no longer feel that frustration. You know, you talk about like sometimes you have within any group of people, you have those who are, let's try something new. And then the other ones are like, wait, slow down. And then the ones were like, nope, we're not changing. And then thinking about like, how do you engage everyone so that you're not leaving anyone out? And so for me, somehow that felt a little bit more pivotal, and it seemed like an easier way to move things forward. Not easier, I should say, but
right.
See, it seems like there was actually a little bit more possibility there, I should say.
No, and I love that. You know, I refer to those sort of hesitant spaces or those as the three rings of Dante, right? So lots of my listeners have heard me refer to that. You know, so these are the, you know, the hell yesers, this new thing, we're going to do this, we're going to be all in, you know, the hell knows, I'm not doing it. That's not how we've always done it. Exactly. And the what the hell's in the middle, right?
Exactly. So
I like your version better. It's much kinder. but I appreciate that. You know, I'm really curious, can you give us, I mean, because I assume that you are using design thinking, not just as educators or as school leaders, the adults in the space, but that design thinking is actually becoming, if it's not already, a part of the DNA of the school. And the students are learning those skills as well and having those mindset shifts as part of their own journey. So can you give us an example, like a tangible example of this in action?
Sure. Yes, of course. So one of the things that I think at least is most relevant in the moment is really wanting to be responsive, right, to the needs of the community. And we have, in this very moment, right, we have a lot of challenges, right? There's no doubt about that. And I do think that schools have become, for the most part, that central community space. Mm-hmm. So I think most would agree when I say that, you know, during the pandemic, we sort of lost the opportunity for us to gather. And in a lot of ways, even a lot of those places where people would gather formally or informally to build those relationships and connections, not all of them have survived. And so the school is actually, for many, is that central place and now holds that space for the members of our community, right? Like, that is the touch point for many of our families. And so what we found or what we experienced in real time were there were specific moments where I'll speak for myself as adults, felt the weight of all of the changes that we're experiencing, you know, whether it's political or environmental or social, and we bring that with us to school. And so this idea of, well, we're just going to leave that outside, close the door, and we'll focus on our, you know, ABCs is just not cutting it, right? So I would say there was probably two big moments, one being, you know, the most recent election, where the students after the election, so it was kind of interesting because we didn't get the sense, and I'm saying we just as the adult members of the community, didn't get the sense that they wanted to engage leading up to the election, but right after they were there. They were like, we want to talk about this. We want to talk about all the issues, all the things. And so what we were able to do then is that, as you're saying, well, think about, you know, what our spaces and resources are. So we have these times carved out in our schedule where students would meet in small groups as advisory, or sometimes we use that for them to gather in grade level groups. But this time we said, okay, so we're going to use that time instead to just be adaptable to the needs of the community. And so our Dean of Faculty and Student Success put together a program to allow students to actually choose how they wanted to engage in the moment. So some students wanted to have a debate, and what's remarkable is that they wanted faculty there, right? They knew they wanted to have these conversations, but they wanted adult presence so that they could talk and feel like there was some, you know, I guess you would say guardrails in place to make sure that it was respectful. And then there was another space for students who just wanted to be creative. Maybe they wanted to color or draw. They wanted to have a way of working through what they were processing in a more artistic way. And then another space where it was just like quiet reflection. You could be writing or just you doing your own journaling or thinking, but that space was silent. And by giving students the opportunity to just do their own self-check, what do I need in the moment? How do I want to process what it is that we're moving through? I think just shifted because I think they also recognize, oh, yeah, we don't have the same needs. And what came out of that as well, I might add, was even the students who wanted to debate, you know, they more verbal processing, they also wanted to think through, okay, so how do we create the space in a way that everybody feels heard? Like, what are the things, you know, I mean, I think most of the times when you set up a classroom, it's the teacher who's setting norms, but to have it come from the students to say, okay, we know if we want this to work well, there's a certain way that we can organize ourselves to do that. And so just like you said, having the students also see that process of like, okay, here's something that we want to address. Here's how we can design things so that there's flexibility. And then here's even how we can continue to add to and develop it, because nothing has to be perfect, right? That's the whole idea behind this design process, is you try something and then you see how it goes and you test it and then you make certain changes and then there's another iteration. And so for them, it's been like, oh, yeah, that's the process. And we want you to take that into any area of your life, right? Like, we do have a lot of creatives because this is a space that really does allow them to see, yeah, you keep doing the thing and you keep improving on it. And so that's been a wonderful way of allowing the students to see how that process unfolds as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that the naturally built-in agency that you're fostering within the community that is your school. So that's fabulous. You know, I always like to sort of end the conversations recognizing that people are thinking about what they've been listening to us chatter about for the last little bit and often have a lot of questions. And the question that to me, you know, if I were sitting from afar, I want to know from you is really sort of what are you excited about next in the journey of the school, right? Given the current times that we're sitting in right now on a global scale, right? And the fact that you have kiddos out and about in the city doing incredible things, learning about themselves and their community. What are you as school leader, what are you excited about that's sort of coming down the road for you and for your students?
Yeah, I mean, I want to say that, you know, it sounds like just more progress on this journey, right? But really allowing students to see, you know, just, you know, we're 7 years old, right? So we're still fairly young, even though, like I said, we have proof of concept. We have students who are graduated and gone on to be successful. And so more of that, just more of the students being able to see and you know, have alumni come back to the school and talk to younger students. And so that always seems very exciting. And I also think that there is a lot of optimism in what I'm saying, but I do believe that the more students feel empowered, as you said, their own agency, when they get to see like how they can make decisions that impact who they are and how they show up, I am inspired to see that they are actually recognizing that they have choices. Like, okay, well, maybe engaging in this way isn't serving me. And so maybe I do want to do something different, right? Because I do think that in a lot of spaces, especially if students feel like they're only allowed to show up in one way in that community, right? That goes back to the whole belonging piece. It's like, if you are in a community which only tells you to show up in one way, then you tend to hold on to that restriction for, you know, much of your life, right? Probably until you reach a certain age where you're like, I can't do it anymore. But we're trying to get them there now, right? Like, no, be you now. Like, figure out what your unique gifts and talents are now. You don't have to wait. You can do that now. And obviously, these are larger conversations because I know a lot of times, too, you know, the students don't feel like, we're like, well, my parents want me to do X, Y. So they still struggle with some of those tensions, right? And so we do have those conversations with them about what that looks like. And I think just letting them know that it comes out of, you know, of course, it's rooted in love, but it comes out of the uncertainty that we're all feeling. And part of it, which is kind of an interesting twist, is because things are so uncertain, it almost gives students even more of a license to chart their own path, if that makes sense, because the truth of the matter is we don't know what's going to happen a year from now. And so even though we had been saying that, like, oh, we're not sure, like now we're experiencing, like, this is the future that we were talking about for so long. We're in it now, and things are changing so much more quickly than we could have anticipated. And so because, you know, adults and young people alike are all experiencing that together, it almost seems like there's even more of an opportunity, especially for what we would consider to be our creative, our, you know, our visionary, our imaginative young person to feel like, okay, I actually am on the right track because nobody knows what's going on.
That's right. This stuff is real right now, right? Absolutely. I love that very much. Thank you for that sort of last recap. I think it's very grounding, I would imagine, for lots of folks. So we appreciate that. Thank you so much for taking time out of your day, Kalima, and just for the work that you do. It's very, very inspiring. And I cannot wait to see what the next 7 years look like.
Thank you so much, Annalisa. It's been a pleasure speaking with you today.
Thank you for joining us for Learning Unboxed, a conversation about teaching, learning, and the future of work. I want to thank my guests and encourage you all to be part of the conversation. Meet me on social media at Annalise Corbin, and join me next time as we stand up, step back, and lean in to reimagine education.